Hello, Blue Ocean. I just want to name that it's been quite a weekend. We're having a heat wave here in Michigan, and there are distressing headlines that make us feel helpless. So let's take a moment to just breathe, settle into this place today, to this time together. We'll be discussing the metaphor of shepherd and sheep in Scripture alongside our own experience of raising sheep. So perhaps a breath prayer we can try together is on the in-breath, the eternal is my shepherd. And on the out-breath, who cares for us always. And on the in-breath, God provides me rest. And on the out-breath, God soothes our fears. Today, both Javen and I will be sharing at different times, so you'll hear both of our voices. For those of you who don't know, I'm Emily Miner.
And I'm Javen Miner. We've been attending Blue Ocean for around 4 years, and I've also recently just joined the board. We recently relocated from Dexter to a larger farm on 60 acres in Manchester, where we currently have a flock of about 60 sheep. We started raising sheep in 2017, and with each passing year, we are slowly learning how to be better shepherds. We both grew up around the Bible, but not around sheep. And from the moment we got sheep, we began to better understand the parts of the Bible that use sheep as a metaphor for people. We thought it would be fun to weave some of our lived experience in with scriptures to add to the tapestry of your own faith. You see what I did there? Weaving, tapestry. Did you know wool comes from sheep? We thought it would. So as an introduction, for those of you who may not be as familiar, the Bible is full of great literature that explores the idea of our God as a good shepherd and describes people as being like sheep. At first, this feels odd to us as readers, but this was a great analogy in the culture for whom the Bible was originally written. Sheep were a common animal. They were often involved in meals and religious traditions, and most people would have had some common knowledge of sheep. They were integral to many societies because of their amazing ability to turn food that we can't digest, like grass, cellulose, into meat, fiber, and milk, keeping all that hard-earned grain for bread. In most of the Old Testament stories, shepherds are held in high esteem, included some big names like Abel, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, David. But by the time of Jesus, they had been relegated to second-class citizens who were not often to be trusted, frequently hired hands who grazed flocks on distant lands for wages. While the scriptures were full of good shepherds who clearly made a lot of mistakes, the contemporary shepherds of Jesus' time were often viewed much less favorably. So most people would know the difference between a good and a bad shepherd. There were lots of examples of both, and how that might change the appearance and nature of the sheep they keep. Jesus speaks to this dynamic in a well-known passage in John 10, verses 11 through 14. He says, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep in his care. The hired hand is not like the shepherd caring for his own sheep. When a wolf attacks, snatching and scattering the sheep, he runs for his life, leaving them defenseless. The hired hand runs because he only works for wages and does not care for the sheep. But I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me." Obviously, in our culture, there is much less knowledge of sheep. I think the stereotype of sheep is that they're pretty dumb animals who would follow each other off a cliff. And even amongst most farmers, the stereotype is that sheep are constantly searching for ways to get themselves killed. And we can see how they get these stereotypes, but this misses a lot of the inherent wisdom that they bring. We hope today to help you understand some of this wisdom and perhaps understand yourself and your relationship with the divine differently as well.
So John 10 says, "I know my sheep and my sheep know me." Turns out this has also been proven by science. Some researchers use sheep as a test animal for a degenerative brain disease. A key test of cognitive skills in sheep is actually facial recognition. There's a great National Geographic video, which you can watch later, because I'm sure you're going to want to. But in it, the researchers train sheep to associate a celebrity face with a treat. They take this celebrity face and then put it beside a stranger's face, and they're still really good at picking the celebrity face in order to get the treat. They make it more complicated then and show not the same picture that the sheep have been trained on, but the same celebrity in a different picture, and they're still quite good, similar to the level of a human or a primate at facial recognition. We didn't really know that when we got sheep. We actually didn't know much at all. Remember when I said earlier that we're learning to be better shepherds? Well, we're figuring out our sheep, and our sheep are figuring us out, but it didn't start out that way. When you first get sheep, you imagine these cute, cuddly little creatures following you around, and they are cute and cuddly when you can get close to them. It turns out sheep are actually prey animals, and we are predators. So our eyes are in front of our faces, easily able to track what's in front of us, whereas sheep have their eyes on the sides of their faces. They have great 320-degree vision because of that, ready to see threats while they're grazing, but it means they have very poor depth perception. They can only see clearly about 20 feet away, and they have this large blind spot right in front of them. Anyone know somebody like that? When they see something coming at them, their response typically is to run away. This is a reasonable survival mechanism, but obviously it makes it hard to work with them if they don't know you and they don't trust you. In fact, our friends have these great t-shirts that say, "Sorry for what I said when we were moving sheep." Moving sheep can be very difficult. The best piece of advice that we got when we were getting started was to move no faster than you would if you had a full cup of tea. That does a great job of centering this pace of relaxation, refusing to hurry the process. When you start to hurry, the sheep sense that, and they also hurry, but in the exact wrong direction. Ezekiel 34 is an entire chapter in the Bible that basically shares the story of sheep who hurried in the exact wrong direction and the great effort that it took to gather them back up. So, as Pastor Emily says, once upon a time, there was a flock of sheep well-loved by their shepherd. He hired help to tend to his flock, but began to get reports of ill treatment. He got quite angry and berated the negligent shepherds. "Woe to you shepherds, whose only concern is to protect and nourish yourself. Isn't it a shepherd's job to look after the sheep? Yet you exploit them in every way. You devour their fat, make soft clothes and blankets out of their wool, and slaughter the best sheep for your table. Meanwhile, you don't take care of the sheep at all. You have not sought to nurse the weak. You have not gone out to tend the sick. You have not bandaged the injured. You don't bring back the strays or look for the lost. You have led them with neglect, ruled them with harshness, shepherded them with cruelty. They had no real shepherd, so they have scattered. The entire flock was prey for wild beasts. My sheep drifted aimlessly throughout all the mountains and up and down every hill. My flock was scattered over all the world, scattered like the stars in the night sky, and not a single shepherd went looking for them. Bad shepherds, it turns out, are in it for themselves. When the going gets tough, these shepherds flee just like the sheep. They may have been with the sheep, but they didn't tend to the sheep. They benefited from the sheep, but they didn't bring benefit to the sheep. In short, nothing was improved, and eventually the flock scattered, and they did nothing to reunite the flock. At that point, the sheep went feral. They were spread out all over and had to tend for themselves. For themselves. With a scattered flock, the owner of this flock had no choice but to either give up or dig in. Sheep don't do well by themselves, and they're accustomed to protection. We read that this owner took on the role of shepherd and went out to rescue his scattered flock from the mountainous places in the valleys. No matter where they are scattered, I will find them, we read. Then, as I read it, we hear about the hopes for his scattered flock. As Ezekiel writes, "I will feed them on good pastures. They will graze on the mountain heights of Israel. They will lie down to rest on this good ground, and they will feed on succulent grasses in bountiful pastures on the slope of Israel's sanctuary mountains. I myself will watch over my sheep and feed my flock. Whenever they are tired, I will lead them to rest on the cool mountain grass. When they are lost, I will seek them and bring back every last stray. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak." There's a tone shift then as the Bible turns to address the sheep. I have to say, as a shepherd, I've been there. You had this dream of what it could look like. Succulent grasses, sanctuary mountains, this idyllic view. And then the sheep themselves arrive in the frame, and suddenly you're like, wait, this was not my dream. Are you not satisfied grazing in blooming pastures, feasting off rich mountain lands? Do you have to trample all of the pastures with your feet? Are you not satisfied drinking out of clear mountain streams? Do you have to muddy all of the mountain streams with your feet? Because you fat sheep bully the weak, push them around and threaten them with your horns until you scatter them to distant mountains, I will step in and save them. I will rescue them, and they will no longer be hunted and hassled. I will establish a covenant of peace with them and drive away all the dangerous wild animals from the land. Then they will live safely in the wilderness and sleep soundly in the forest. I will make them and the area around my holy hill a blessing. At my direction, there will be plenty of rainfall when it's needed. There will be showers of blessing. The trees of the field and orchards will bear abundant fruit. The soils of the fields will produce ample crops, and my people will rest securely within their land. They'll be safe and free and fearless. I will make their land famous for its beauty and productivity. Never again will famine strike their land. We read initially the sheep didn't do well under even their true shepherd's care. They had been feral. They didn't know the routine anymore. They fouled up the water, making it dirty to drink from. They were in it for themselves individually. Sometimes when we let the sheep into a new pasture area, you'll see them go crazy trying just the perfect plant to eat. But if they do that too much, the good stuff gets trampled in search of perfection. We also learned that there were fat sheep pushing skinny sheep around, which does happen, and the shepherd has to step in. When these sheep went from being tended by bad shepherds to being feral to being back with a good shepherd, it took quite a lot of involvement from the shepherd to get good outcomes. Eventually, it ends with the shepherd making a covenant to make their land famous for beauty and productivity. We'll look more into this partnership of animal, shepherd, and landscape next, but just to recap, so sheep know their shepherd. They know what's good for them, but they have a blind, they can know what's good for them, but they do have a blind spot in front of them. You shouldn't hurry them or they get panicky. When sheep have been poorly managed, the correction is sometimes quite involved in order to get beauty and productivity. That feels like a years-long, if not generations-long process. Honestly, the more I learn about sheep, the more I can relate to the understanding of sheep like being like people, and of the tough job that a shepherd has in trying to guide us humans towards goodness.
So far, we've primarily talked about the outward interaction of the sheep with the shepherd, but another fun aspect of working with sheep is the depth of knowledge and the keen eye that a good shepherd must develop to look at the local landscape and the ecology. Modern American sheep raising tends to fall into two camps. In drier or more mountainous terrain, think out west, or maybe where more like biblical, where the Bible was written, the sheep are led out into an expansive range, often with someone or a guard dog to look after them, but free to roam a large area for weeks or months at a time, essentially feral. In more settled farmlands, sheep are allowed to graze in fenced pastures all summer long. In both cases, when the lambs are weaned, they're sent to a barn and fed grain. In both cases, the sheep are getting to choose basically whatever they want for the first part of their life, and then the shepherd controls everything after that. For us, looking at the Bible, there can and should be so much more dynamism to this relationship. Ezekiel clearly points out both the need for a good shepherd to guide and protect, but also the individual sheep and flock culture have a responsibility for how they eat and drink and share the resources. One of the most compelling and beautiful descriptions of this comes from a book which describes traditional French shepherds, which through generations of observation know how to move their sheep across landscapes in circuits that stimulate the sheep's appetite in the morning, move them onto lush pastures to satiate them in the afternoon, and then provide them shade for rest and rumination, chewing on their cud. Because they know the capacity of the landscape and have observed their sheep and the land, and the sheep have learned their routine and can express their individual preferences for those plants, the system is in balance. and remains productive, beautiful, and diverse. I think our American way of raising sheep mirrors the binary ways in which we tend to view God and ourselves. But the richness of the biblical shepherd metaphor suggests it's a partnership. I find it helpful to let that sink in sometimes. The divine creator of the universe wants to be my partner, wants to guide and protect me so that I can be healthy and bring healing. Remember all that trampling of the lush pastures and muddying the clean springs in Ezekiel? This is biblical land degradation. But now we can add one more criticism. They burp. As many of you know, sheep and cow burps contain methane, which is a potent greenhouse gas. So they're often seen as a contributor to climate change, along with cows. Not going to only throw the sheep under the bus. In some circles, we humans are also mainly seen as a negative force on the landscape and the climate, with the assumption being that fewer sheep and fewer people would be good for the earth. And objectively, with the way that a lot of livestock is managed and fed from our landscapes, and the way many of us live on the landscapes, we can see that we do a lot of harm. But to us, this is because we have fallen into the same bad habits of both sheep and shepherd that Ezekiel describes. The sheep aren't the problem, even if they can or would cause problems if they were left feral. Modern science, historical analysis, and creative farmers all over the world are showing that this relationship between a sheep and a shepherd can in fact bring healing to the landscapes, can increase diversity, and draw down soil carbon into our soils from the atmosphere. For us as farmers, this is the ultimate goal, partnering with the sheep to bring health, beauty, and wholeness to landscapes similar to the covenant described by the shepherd in Ezekiel. As we near the end, we may ask the big question, so what? The Bible uses sheep because, like many metaphors in the Bible, it's a complex one. There's an easy surface interpretation. When we're called sheep, it's intended to point out how stupid we are, or how we just follow blindly. But when you get to know sheep, you can see that the metaphor is naming a potential. And the potential that is nearly always named in these places is sheep with a shepherd moving through the world. Sheep and shepherds grow together and know and work with one another. They must spend time together to learn each other's vulnerabilities and weaknesses. The shepherd helps bring flourishing to the sheep. But the sheep also do the work. It is not merely about the relationship between the shepherd, but it is a partnership to do tangible work on a landscape in a world in need of healing. If we are named as creatures quite like a lot of sheep, how are we moving through a landscape in partnership? Do we know the divine? Are we putting the time in to allow the divine cup of tea in hand to show us goodness and beauty? Or do we mostly look on with in disdain, not trusting that there could be goodness that this tea-bearing being may be bringing to us? Are we muddying the waters trying to get the cleanest and best for ourselves? Or are we trampling goodness in search of perfection?
And to leave you with a story to dwell on, I want to tell you about Truffle. She's a matriarch ewe of our flock who we've had since 2017. We've been through thick and thin with her. I really thought she was going to die one year as she was lambing, but she managed to recover and has had many lambs since. Truffle has spent her long life holding us in absolute disdain. We never quite seemed to be getting it right for her. She didn't seem to trust us. Unfortunately, this was a trait she passed off to many of her offspring. So there would always be a Truffle contingent that we struggled to get to move where we wanted them to move. We move sheep every few days in the summer, so this could be quite a challenge. We actually considered removing her from our flock a few times because of this trait, but something always kept her with us. Something shifted this winter. I'm not sure if it was something we did or a change in Truffle, but suddenly she is the one leading the flock where we want them to go. She was the first one in the trailer this summer as we were loading them up to greener pastures. And in the intermittent moves, she seems to finally get what we're doing together. For some reason, she now trusts us. It's an amazing shift. It lets us all work together better. We even moved the sheep through a landscape with no temporary fences to aid us recently, cutting down on both their stress and ours. Her story shows us that I think there's always hope. Always hope for better understanding of our shepherd. Perhaps the shepherd shifting ever so slightly, allowing better accommodations of a sheep's quirks or needs. But this is a years and generations long process. Truffle is older than most people would ever keep a sheep, and yet here she is learning new tricks and proving us wrong yet again about what we thought we knew about sheep. So I invite you now to a time of meditation, and perhaps we can meditate a little bit on some of these questions. Can your eyes be softened to the divine shepherd? Could there be goods to which we are being led? What landscape may lie ahead? Is it one in which you can choose partnership and trust to make that beautiful?
Can we get a round of applause?